ladies and gentlemen.
Get right down to it.
Shouldn't it just go back to, like, the Pride days?
Seriously.
None of this is news to us.
This is what we know for sure. Dana White and UFC are petty.
That is a loaded mouthful. We will have many more discussions than this before it's
over. That is about as literal as you can get.
Welcome to Scrapcast.
And here we go.
All right, all right. Special edition Scrapcast season 4 UFC 300. As stacked as this card was, we needed to have our own special show for it. So yeah, let's get into it, man. Start at the bottom, work our way up, or what do you think?
Yeah, let's start from the bottom and get to the good shit.
All right.
Davison Figueiredo, Cody Garbrandt. All right, so probably could have been a main event for a fight night card.
Oh, definitely could
right?
have. Definitely could have.
Two big names. Former champions. Both guys with heavy hands. I know that I personally expected a banger. Mm. Right? I expected them to go toe-to-toe, especially considering Garbrandt's chin and how it's been. I thought Figueiredo would have...
Or non-chin.
Or non-chin, lack thereof. Yeah. Neck tats don't help your chin, apparently.
Really? That's crazy.
I mean,
they do good for Beck Rawlings.
You know? Okay, well, not for Cody Garbrandt. I like that we got to see that different side of Davison Figueiredo. That cold, calculated, waiting for his opportunity, which was a little boring at first, for sure, because you definitely had the feeling that he could have knocked Cody Garbrandt out if he wanted to, right?
Oh, definitely could have. Yeah.
But at that new weight division, I think it was good, especially for everybody else watching that fight in that weight class, for them to see Davison go for the takedowns, get the takedowns, control him on the ground, and get a submission.
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, the name of the game is fighting smarter, not harder. Why put yourself in a position where the other guy has a strength when, you know, Garbrandt's submission game, highly questionable at best, and so why not, when you're a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, be able to take down Garbrandt and just, you know, test him there, like, and avoid the punishment? Why not, you know?
Right.
I mean,
it
makes sense, especially when you're a former champion, he's a former champion, you know, it makes sense. That wasn't the way that I fucking had it on most of my parlays.
No.
I had them as soon as the wind blew, Garbrandt was going to go down.
Yeah.
And not to say that it wasn't, but I forgot it wasn't an arena and there's not a lot of wind in there. So,
well, and you know, we're both yelling at Figueiredo in that first round of that fight because we had seen Kelleher do the same thing against Garbrandt.
Yes,
just not engage in the striking.
Yep.
Which Garbrandt's still offensively good.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he can still throw. He's still quick. He's still a hard hitter. But knowing that you have that off button, I feel like, you know, you should engage in the stand-up a little bit more to see if you can test that chin. Because not only, even if you don't get the knockdown, well, we don't see Garbrandt react well to being punched anymore.
Yes.
Like, he turtles up. He turns and runs. Like,
he drops.
He drops. He gets,
yes,
real gun shy.
Real
he gets, like, you, yep, see that look in his eyes. It's that fear. He's just been knocked out so many times.
Yeah.
That it's like becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. But again, I like that Figueiredo went to that throwback and was like, you know, I was a jiu-jitsu guy first.
Yep.
Like, I can take fools down. I can choke him out.
Yeah.
And I think that puts, you know, the rest of the division on notice. And I know he's old, and I know he's calling for a title shot or a title eliminator.
I mean, neither of these guys are young, so.
Right.
Yeah.
But what's Figueiredo, like 36?
You know, he may be younger than that. Not really sure. Sometimes these guys, they start really early, so it'd be hard to know, but he's
true.
Been in a lot of wars, that's for sure.
Right. And not only that, but especially at those lighter weight classes, like, champs just don't last beyond 35. Even the best. We saw it with Volk. Like, that's just kind of how it goes, you know? So, props to him. I thought it was a good performance. Not the performance I thought I was going to see, but impressive nonetheless.
No, it was. The next fight, obviously, to my view, lived up to the hype. Bobby Green versus Jim Miller. Definitely expect a lot out of these veterans. They showed out. Jim Miller maybe showing out more of his, you know, his chin, his ability to stay in there longer. than need be. But still really good fight. I knew going in that it was going to be a hard fight for Miller because stylistically, Bobby presented a lot of challenges for him. You know, where he kept his hands, being able to avoid the takedowns, shrug off the takedowns, being able to be way more offensively boxing sound in Miller's face. You know, Miller has got, had got some knockouts or knocked out, you know, some quick finishes beforehand. Mm-hmm. But not to the level of a Bobby Green, you know? And so I knew that it was going to be a harder chance for him. I knew that there was a lot of, like, fan favoritism or a lot of, like, hope for Jim Miller because he did fight at UFC 100, get a win, mm-hmm. fight at UFC 200 and get a win. So there was, like, this kind of storyline going.
Well, and he had looked better. So, and this is the, one of those traps that you fall into in MMA, especially, is Miller had looked better in his last five fights than Green had, because I think Green had been knocked out in two of his last four or five fights. Like, even though he's the striker, he's been getting knocked out.
Yeah.
And Jim Miller's been getting wins and, you know, getting some knockouts, but the level of competition wasn't the same.
And that's what I was going to say, is that while Bobby Green has taken some wins and some losses,
he's been fighting
towards the top.
Exactly, top
15. Yeah, whereas Miller was fighting veterans and then started fighting guys just coming in.
Exactly.
And so it was like the very bottom and the very like end of the age scale was where he was fighting. So then this fight against Bobby Green was really going in there to the deep end. Yeah. And,
Well, so what disappointed me was Jim Miller not even attempting a takedown at any point in that fight. Because we had just talked about this with the Figueiredo. Like, why test that when you have an advantage in one area of the fight? Mm-hmm. And I know Bobby Green has good takedown defense, but Jim Miller is really good on the ground.
Yeah.
And he should have at least attempted. Maybe he fell in love with his striking, because he did drop Bobby Green in that first round.
Yeah.
So maybe he just was too confident. But the way the next two rounds unfolded, it's hard for me to think that at some point he couldn't come to the conclusion that he should at least attempt it or at least clinch, because he just started getting messed up.
Yeah, his face got carved up real bad, and at the end of the third round, I mean the whole third round, but definitely the latter part of the third round was not only just survival, but like I don't understand why the ref didn't jump in there to stop
Probably could have.
Yeah, after a lot of punishment. So, yeah, that was kind
of
heinous.
I think they needed some of that blood on the canvas. You know, it's UFC 300.
To help the feel of it.
Exactly. And I was going to say, that's why I like these kinds of fights early in the card. Because then for the rest of the card, you're just looking at this blood smeared all over the canvas.
Where was that from?
Yeah, well, that's all Jim Miller's face.
Yeah.
But, you know, good on Bobby Green. Tough for Jim Miller, but it was a good fight, I thought.
No, it was a really good fight. And, I was expecting that fight to be the, underdog or flying under the target for mm-hmm. potential fight of the night.
Right.
And so, to me, it lived up to my expectations. It was funny. I remember watching the fight, and it was like the second round going into the third, at the end of the second going into the third, and you were like, well, Bobby Green has blood on him now. Yeah. It's Jim Miller's blood, but he has blood on him now.
I know.
That's true.
I was reaching. Marina Rodriguez, Jessica Andrade. I feel like this one we need to talk about, because I feel like we scored this one differently.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, so it ends up being a split decision.
I scored it right, you scored it wrong.
Okay. Okay. So remind me. Split decision win for Andrade.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
But I gave it 2-1, Marina Rodriguez.
Yes. It was really the second round, how you scored that second round.
Right.
Yeah. Because Rodriguez had most of that round, she was controlling and getting off a lot of her punches. At the end, she suffered a lot of damage, and Andrade was coming full force at her towards the end of the round and putting a lot of pressure on her. And so that's kind of how you look at it. Do you give it more to one fighter for, you know, it wasn't like controlling with like grappling, it was like dictating the pace, keeping her jab and keeping the 1-2, hitting her with that right, that solid right over and over again. Yeah. And so she was landing that the whole time, but it's hard to tell the level of damage that it's really causing to that fighter. Whereas when Andrade went off on Rodriguez, Rodriguez was like trying to stay in there and getting wally whopped and getting pushed back against the fence, and it was like, and the ref was getting close in there, like maybe he needs to jump in. And so it to me, it showed way more of the level of damage. And when you're trying to score it, that's why I went that way. Now, I mean, I didn't want to score it that way. Like, it wasn't like I wanted Andrade to win it. I had fucking Rodriguez on my parlay. So I wanted Rodriguez. When you told me at the end, you were like, I got it two rounds. I was like, fuck, maybe. Hopefully. But when the judges were like, we got it two rounds to one for Andrade, I was like, yeah, that's what I saw too.
So I didn't think that last 30-second flurry was enough to negate the 4.5 minutes of striking that Marina had put in the beginning of that round, you know, that whole round, you know, she had dictated the pace. She had landed her shots. She was controlling. And those, I mean, she was landing great shots. Like I said, she was landing that right hand over and over again.
Yeah. And I think the important thing is, like, I think in this scenario that, you know, a lot of times when we see judges score things, we think, what the fuck is the judge watching? Mm-hmm. Right. In this scenario, it's either like, do you give it to the person that had more clear sense of damage and almost got the fight to finish, or do you give it to the person that like did, you know, more throughout the entire round? And I think that no matter what, however the judges would have scored it, I think it would have been like fine to me, just because I seen it that way and the judges scored it that way. That's what makes sense to me. But and it's kind of like what I think would be a clear indication moving forward is like who gets closer. Cause there are times, you know, that's sort of like the whole pride, the underlining whole like pride scoring thing is like, you can get beat up the entire time, but if you get the other guy and you almost finish him at the end, you know what I'm saying? That's right. Where that whole thing like comes from, you know, a big part of that is. And so to me, it's a clear indication of where the fight's at. It's a clear indication of who did what in it. And so that's why I prefer to score things that way. But if the judges would have went the other way, it would have totally made sense. It wasn't like there was one way or another. It was really a wrong way of how to score it. It was just more or less, I guess, like, you know, fundamentally, how do you see that?
What you value over. Yeah. And if it had been more of a, you know, like, 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes one way, and two or a minute and a half and 2 minutes the other way, I probably would have agreed. It just wasn't quite enough. And if there had been a knockdown and some ground and pound, I probably would have been swayed the other way too. But she just put in too much good work for the majority of that round for me to say you didn't win that round. But you're right, and that's the difference between judging a fight as a whole and judging it round by round. Mm-hmm. Because instead of saying, well, who won that fight? And people can pretty much come to a consensus. So like, well, dude, you know, homeboy won that fight. You have to judge it round. Okay, well, who won that round? Mm-hmm. And then you reset and you go out for another round. It's, you know, how you pile up rounds. So.
And I think it's important to remember this because I know there's going to be a fight coming up within, like, fairly soon where it's going to, you're going to be feeling the other way about it, you know? And I'm going to be like, yo, do you remember the Andrade Rodriguez fight? Like, you know, because, like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it was really good fight. And here's the thing. Here's the most important part, I think, to this fight. This fight caught a lot of flack from the fans beforehand. Like, why is this fight even on the card? You know? Right, why is this? Right. How is this a UFC 300, quote-unquote, air quotes, you know, level of fight? And it's like both of these fighters showed up. Both of them perform a high level. We touched about this beforehand. Doesn't matter what fight either of these two are in. Rodriguez, gonna constantly come at you, try to pick you apart, you know, putting the strikes in your face. And Draj is gonna move like female Wanderlei Silva and throw like looping heavy hooks, whether she gets knocked out or knocks you out, right?
Yeah.
And so no matter what, this fight was going to perform. And so that was one thing I think that needs to be addressed, is because there was a lot of flack that it caught beforehand, and I didn't understand why. I thought it was unjustified. There are a lot of fights. There are a lot of female fighters that when they put on don't have as fan-friendly performances.
No, I agree.
That could have, you know, that maybe I would have understood if people would have been like, oh, why is this on there? But these two, like, come on.
Well, so that's an interesting point, because it's, you're like, what is it that you're really upset about, and what is it that you're really looking for? If you're just looking for name recognition, maybe you have a point there, because not everyone knows Marina Rodriguez.
Even though Andrade is a former champion.
But that's what I'm saying. Andrade is a former champ.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I know she never defended it, but
she slammed Rose on her head and took Rose out. That's why Rose lost the title.
I know. I mean, she got it right back, but no, that's the whole thing. Andrade puts on fan-friendly performances. She fights at multiple different weight classes. Mm-hmm. She's a tough out for anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so if you're looking for matchups that are going to deliver, you absolutely should have been looking forward to this.
Yeah.
But if you were just looking at like, oh, it's not a name. It's not one of the big names. It's not McGregor. It's not. Then, I mean, I guess you've got a point there. But how many times do we see those flying under the radar fight night cards where even we don't know some of these guys on there, but they go in and they show up and they put on a good performance, you know?
Yeah. And I think that maybe this, we'll touch upon this later, but like, that's the thing about it. Like, you can't put a fight card together with all these, you know, high level name value talents and not have it affect the cards beforehand and afterhand.
Right. Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so as much as people want to be like, oh, like you said, you know, I know that's not what you're saying, but like, oh, why wasn't McGregor on there or something like that? It's like, dude, this is one night. If we put all that on there, I mean, we're talking like months before we're going to have something. I mean, not like nothing, but it's going to be like a pay-per-view where there's like one fight that you really care about and the rest of it, you're like, this isn't a pay-per-view fight.
Exactly. So. Exactly. And at this point in his career, I think McGregor's probably a bad example.
Yeah. Just name value.
But exactly.
But that would be the opposite, right?
Right.
It's not about the performance. It's not about even about the dude having a chance to win the fight necessarily anymore.
Yeah.
Just the name value. Whatever card they put McGregor on, there are people still constantly whenever they find out that, you know, I watch MMA or whatever when I'm talking to them and they're like, "Oh, McGregor, blah blah blah." And I'm just like, "Dude, like that's a long time ago. Dude, like, what do you know?"
Homeboy hasn't been relevant in like 6 years.
I know, but if he comes on and fights, all these motherfuckers are going to tune in and watch it. You know what I'm saying? Regardless.
Filthy casuals.
I mean, it is what it is. But, you know, we got to touch on Jalen Turner, probably with the biggest fuck-up award of the night.
So,
you know?
Yeah, so Jalen Turner and Renato Moicano. Again, so this is probably the only – there's, what, two fights on the card that did not have a former champ?
Yeah.
On the matchup?
I think so.
I mean, maybe the Bobby Green and Jim Miller, because neither one of those guys ever made interim. But so you had a couple of these fights. We just like, dude, not everyone can be a current champ, former champ.
Yeah, there was like three or something.
Whatever.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. So, but again, looking at matchups, we knew the different ways how this could unfold. Like, this was
the first round and a half, Jalen Turner.
That was the thing. It was like either Jalen Turner gets an early knockout or Renato Moicano ends up, you know, dominating and imposing his will and getting a decision. Probably not.
Yeah. Or submission.
I wasn't thinking. I thought Jalen Turner was going to be able to avoid the submission. But anyway, like you said, Jalen Turner, not super high fight IQ, absolutely levels Renato Moicano in the first minute and a half of that fight and tries to walk off.
Yeah.
And they don't call it.
Yeah. In a lightweight fight,
which allows Renato
Moicano to wake up and do the Undertaker and get up, you know,
yeah, and proceed to finish him. I mean, how much longer did that fight go? Second round,
so, the end of the second round.
Yeah. So he was able to withstand the rest of whatever Jalen had in the first round,
and then he took him down, and he just, you know, beat him up, not necessarily like with a lot of damage, but just overwhelmed him to the point where Jalen Turner couldn't do anything, and then the ref jumped in and they stopped him.
Yeah, so that's one of those smart TKOs,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, you grapple him, you get him on the ground, you go for position over submission, and then when you finally have their back and you have them flattened out, you just start wailing on the side of their heads.
Yeah, Bo Nickel could have taken some advice from Moicano.
Absolutely.
And we'll get to that later, but yeah, no, I didn't see anything bad with it. If anything, it's a good lesson for Jalen Turner to take. And dude, I don't know about afterwards. Have you heard Moicano afterwards? Because like Moicano does like his like podcast, right? So he has this like performance. They were, you know, people were asking him like on his podcast. They were like, "So you gonna fight Max? You gonna fight Max?" Because they're like, you know, same weight division and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like talking about like. He was like, "Look, man, it would make no sense for me to fight Max. He's like, that guy's a legend. He's already built himself. I'm trying to build myself. And so what makes sense for me while I'm building on this way up is fighting like Patty Pimblett or like somebody that. Like that. Okay. But here's the thing, right? It like goes against this whole argument because it's like the way that you work your way up to being a legend is by beating the legends and not taking the easier fights in the division. That's all I'm saying.
Yes and no. You don't gain a whole lot by getting your ass kicked by Max Holloway, okay?
I know, but that's what I'm saying, though. You know, if you're trying to make your way up to the title, you're going to end up having to fight Max some way.
Well, not at lightweight. And that's the thing.
Well, now we don't know.
that's a good point. But even at featherweight, that was the thing. Like, people didn't understand that at first, which is why they kept giving Max contenders, and he kept derailing all of them.
Yeah.
Which is why this whole scenario is so interesting to me. The only reason Ilya Topuria gets a title shot is because he didn't have to fight Max on the way up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It wasn't because he didn't fight Max, but he didn't fight Max where everyone else did, and they didn't get the title shots.
But I think it's because he didn't.
I know.
I don't think he would have beaten, you know, maybe with the championship push, you know how they say being a champ makes you a 30% better fighter or whatever. Like, maybe with that now, he has a better chance with the confidence from, you know, beating Volk. But no. Ilya Topuria, watching his performances on the way up, watching him get hit and hurt by lesser fighters, and seeing the routes he had to take to get victories and some of the people that he fought. No, I didn't. There's no way I would have picked Ilya Topuria to beat Max Holloway on his way up.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about it on his way up. I definitely think within the last couple fights, I mean, he's really shown like this whole new level of like, you know, within literally the last like two or three fights, he's really putting it all together. And what he's offering now to the division is something that's going to be really hard for anybody, including Max, to deal with.
Right.
And so maybe we'll get into that, but.
Well, so, and this is what I was saying, even for the past couple years, I've been saying like, you're not going to give Max another chance at Volk, so stop making him fight these contenders.
I know. You've been saying that for a long time.
Because you had Arnold Allen, who
Calvin Kattar.
These guys are all went on a great streak, so could have had title shots, and they ran into Max Holloway. And there was even Brian Ortega and Yair Rodriguez. They ended up getting shots.
Yeah.
But they ended up getting shots off of one fight or two fight win streaks as opposed to the five or six fight win streaks they were on before they ran into Max.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, that's the thing about it. Like, that's the beauty of the sport is, like, you know, if Volk hadn't shown up, Max would have been the champion. You know what I'm saying? For a while. Exactly.
Yeah.
But stylistically, what he offered to Max was hard for Max to deal with, and therefore he wore the belt and yada, yada, yada.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So, by all means.
Back to the Jalen Turner McConnell fight.
Oh, okay.
I don't think at this point Jalen Turner is going to learn anything that he needs to learn from that performance, because that's just this is just how it goes for Jalen. He should. He needs to.
Yeah.
Because he has talent. He's got the size for that weight class. But how many times have we seen this exact same thing from Jalen Turner before?
Yeah.
And it's just like, if you haven't learned it by now, you're probably not going to.
You're right. But in all of his other fights, it was like, you know, more or less the emphasis of the lack of the ground game, which still is apparent in this. But to me, it's not even so much that. To me, it's the, like, okay, when he fought Bobby Green, he went after Bobby Green and, like, continuously, and even to the point where a lot of people are like, why is the ref not stopping this fight? Like, it's pretty fucked up, right? And maybe that, like, left something in his mind. So in this fight, when he hurt Moicano, he was like, oh, I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to get involved with that. You know what I'm saying?
Could be.
You need to keep going, especially if you have these errors in your game where it's a big problem. It doesn't matter, like, you know what I'm saying? Look at Justin Gaethje. We can get into that later. He has big holes in his game, but he's been able to carve it out and do very well for himself by focusing on the areas where he's really strong and then taking his opponents and making them having to deal with that.
Yeah.
Jalen Turner can do the exact same thing. It's just, when everything's going good for you, you can't be the one to take the foot off the gas pedal.
Right.
You got to keep it going.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because he would have. He would have finished Moicano in the first round, and we would have never been talking about
this. How many follow-up shots realistically would it have taken?
Fucking one?
Two.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. But it didn't. And whether you can, and whether you want to say they should have stopped it or not is besides the point, because they didn't stop it. Mm-hmm. And now we've seen the result. He ended up losing.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Which is why I always, would like to err on the side of a late stoppage rather than an early stoppage, because we've seen so many of these fighters come back from this, right?
Me too. Me too. And especially in the era where standing stoppages are becoming more and more common, it's like, what the fuck are we really talking about here?
I know.
You know? But anyways. Let's keep moving, because this next one didn't need a standing stoppage.
This was so awesome. I've been all over. I've been on the fucking Diego Lopez bandwagon since the late.
That's how we're gonna start.
Since the Movsar Evloev fight, yeah. He took on short
His
notice.
His first UFC fight, yeah,
and,
exactly.
And gave him all he could handle. Okay,
yeah.
Literally gave him all he could handle in the standing. And he ended up losing. I thought it was a split, but I think I went back and looked, and it was unanimous. But that fight was a lot closer than people give it credit for. Evloev was to the point where he couldn't engage on the feet because he was getting hit, and it was hard for him to engage on the ground.
Yeah.
Because he was worried about not only being attacked on the ground, but also from the submission threat. So it really ended up being a lackluster fight for Evloev because he just kind of had to control
and not do anything else,
right?
Yep.
So and since then, Diego's rattled off like 3 first-round stoppages.
Yeah.
Which has been killer. And then Super Sadiq Youssef, who I also consider to be a really good featherweight, somebody that's
up-and-coming talent.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
And he just went in there and he smoked that dude.
Yeah, ran through him. I know. And that was the thing. When I first seen this fight got put on, I was like, oh, Diego Lopez, yeah, for sure. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, dude, I think I'm undercutting Youssef.
Yeah.
He just had this fight with Barbosa where he almost finished Barbosa.
Yeah.
Like, and that's like one of the top stand-up dudes in the division. Plus, he's like built like a shit brick house. He's got really good wrestling and grappling. He could be a really big threat to Diego Lopez. So as time went on, I kind of walked that back, you know? And then when the fight happened, it was like, oh, we didn't realize Diego Lopez has a fucking hammer in his fucking right hand. And he just hit him over the head with it, you know?
And he's so aggressive, too, which is what I like about Diego. He reminds you of those old shootbox fighters.
Yeah, I know.
Just like,
I know.
We're just going to go to war, bro.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. As soon as that bell rings, I know.
And I don't think that losing the way Sadiq Youssef did to Diego Lopez should take anything away from Sadiq
Youssef. Oh, no. Everybody can get caught, you know?
Right.
Seriously.
Yeah. I just think that's how good Diego Lopez is. And until people start taking him seriously, people are going to keep getting run through.
Exactly.
You know?
No, and not only that, but the momentum. I mean,
his last
3 fights are like all under 30 seconds, you know, or right around 30 seconds. I mean, that level of momentum is, you have to be able to deal with that. Like, the next opponent he fights cannot go straight in there to engage with him.
Right.
Like, you need to be, you know, you need to be trying to survive the first, like, round automatically and then start issuing your game plan, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, because this dude is a fucking boulder rolling down the hill that's, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's, nothing but kudos to him, you know, for his performance. I thought it was going to be a lot closer than that. It wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Really interested to see who they match him up with next, because he wasn't even ranked going into this fight against number 13, Youssef. And so I really think that they should give him somebody that's towards the top of the division. Is that justifiable, going from no rank to the top 6 or 7? I don't know, right? It seems like realistically they're going to put him in against somebody within maybe the top 10. He just finished the 13, so maybe give him somebody that's like 10 through 8 or something, right? 10, 8, 9,
right.
Somebody like that.
Right.
And if we were looking at
featherweight?
At featherweight.
So they've got him ranked at 14 now. So Dan Ige, Edson Barboza, Bryce Mitchell, Giga Chikadze, Calvin Kattar. I'm liking any of those matchups right there.
Yeah, I like Kattar, Chikadze. Fuck, I don't think it'd be a good idea for Bryce Mitchell.
I mean, it probably wouldn't, but it would be good for Diego.
It'd be good
saying.
For Diego. Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
I agree too. I think I would like more of the Giga Chikadze, especially with his striking being what it is, or even Calvin Kattar, you know?
Yeah.
I'd like to see where he's at with one of those guys. I wouldn't be opposed to him even fighting Aljo, to be honest with you, you know?
Right.
At number 8. Like, I wouldn't even be opposed to that. I don't know if that's necessarily something you're worried about, but...
I mean, we'll talk about this later, too, but you have to be worried about Aljamain Sterling if you're one of his opponents. Yeah. Like, you have to be able to deal with his wrestling and ground control.
Yeah.
Like, if he decides not to strike with you, like, that would be your best avenue, right, is if he decides to strike with you and get all crazy with it. But if he decides he wants to, like, backpack you, and he's, I mean, he's really fucking good at that.
Okay? I know. He's really good at that. He's really good at tying you down. He's really strong. He's really able to do that. But this is also a guy that went to arguably a split decision on short notice against Evloev, who's really good at grappling, and he's number five in the division.
Right.
So, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
That's why I'm like, maybe that, you know, to me, that seems more interesting to figure out where both fighters are really at, because it would be a task for Aljo, too, to face somebody that's explosive and that dangerous in all those different areas.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, agreed. So, like, I wouldn't be opposed to that. All right. So, load up the crow sandwich, because here it comes. If we would have done a show beforehand, my fucking pick that I would have offered up would have been Holly Holm over Kayla Harrison. I was
at plus 350 or whatever she was going at. I know.
550 or whatever it was. I was so dead set that the odds makers were totally overlooking so much in this fight that anybody that would listen to me, this is what I was beating the drum on. And then we got in there and I realized, no, Holly Holm is going to try to wrestle Kayla Harrison. And oh my God. Like, yeah, she got a reversal. No, exactly. And that's all she got.
That was it.
And then she got fucking beat up. That was it. You know? That was it. And here's the other thing. The other thing is Kayla never fought at 135. Right. Kayla had problems going down to 145 for one fight and had fought her whole career beating tuna cans at fucking 155. Okay. Yes. And so I was like, plus Kayla's like older. She's in her like mid 30s. So I was like, oh, now she has to make 135. This is going to be bad news for Holly Holm. Made 35 a bunch. Fought the best at 135.
Yes.
Beat former Olympic judokas at 135. She knows how to win this fucking fight.
Yes.
The whole time I was on this fucking bandwagon. And then when the fight happened, I was like, this isn't even the same Holly Holm. Where's the other fucking Holly Holm? You know what I'm saying? Like, Jesus. But hats off to Kayla, because she fought that whole first round dominating her and didn't look like she was gassed. Didn't look like she couldn't handle it. Went in there the second round and put the pace on her again. I mean, Kayla's going to be a fucking problem. So, as long as she can make the weight, she's going to be a fucking problem.
So that's what was so impressive, right? Because we talk about this a lot. We talk about the battles before the battle, right? Yeah. And it was right to think that Holly Holm had a chance because of all these things Kayla had to deal with before even getting into the ring.
Yeah.
She'd never fought in the UFC before. Yeah. She wasn't fighting people of the caliber of Holly Holm before. She never fought at 135 before.
Yeah.
Like all these things, you could feel like they stacked the card, they stacked the deck against Kayla Harrison, right?
Yeah.
And for her to go it and not just win, but win convincingly in a dominating fashion. Yes. Mad props to Kayla Harrison. And yes, I we were wrong about that.
And
I thought Holly Holm was going to put up a much better fight than that.
Me too. But I'm going to be honest with you. I'm so happy that it didn't. Because Kayla Harrison is what this division needs.
Agreed.
We need somebody that's this dominating. Somebody that puts this much, you know, problems for the rest of the division. I mean, when we look at the woman's bantamweight, I mean, dude, you tell me who she can't fucking beat. You know?
No, I mean, I'm right there
with her skill set.
Absolutely.
This should be her division.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially being one of the bigger, stronger women in that division, which it obviously looks like she's going to be now.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, absolutely. Juliana Pena, Caitlin Vieira, Myra Buena Silva. Like maybe
Pennington, the champ. Like, give her the title shot.
I know. Maybe Myra Buena Silva catches her, you know.
Yeah, maybe.
Lucky catches she's the old.
Yes, exactly.
But,
yeah.
But
exactly.
Other than that, you're like, I don't see you guys being able to defend her wrestling or her judo takedowns, and she's so strong. And as long as she keeps going with the ground and pound like that, she's gonna.
And here's the thing, Pena is tough, and so as far as like being able to like be scrappy and being there the whole time for five rounds, I would favor Pena maybe to do that. But Pena hasn't fought in so long now. We don't even, you know what I'm saying? We don't even know when she comes back. what that version is going to look like if she comes back.
True, and not just that, but her grappling defense isn't.
Oh no,
at
oh,
the
no.
level that exactly. I think it's going to need to no. be in order to no. fight a Kayla Harrison.
No, no, no. But what I'm saying is she'll get her fucking ass beat for fucking true. 3 rounds, and then be like, guess who's still here?
True.
You know what I'm saying?
Very true.
So that's my only thing. But we haven't seen her in such a long time. It's hard for me to be, like, somewhat confident in that.
Right.
So when I look at the rest of the division, it's just like, fuck, give her whoever. Give her fucking Pennington. Like, let's fucking do this. Like, she yeah, doesn't have a lot of time left. Let's fucking go. I know. You know?
No, I completely agree. Yeah, what a fight though. That was, and it's so funny because we're on Holly Holm's bandwagon for this fight, for this matchup, and even for the first 30 seconds, because she does yeah. reverse that first throw, you're just like, oh, see,
this here we is... go, and then, here we go,
and then no.
Yeah, it was like old school Mark Coleman. Like she got her, she pushed her up to the side of the fucking fence, made it so that Holly couldn't get out of it. And had her, you know, Kayla Harrison had her hips raised up, so she's literally cornered her into the side of the fence, yep. and she's just beating the shit out of her.
Yep.
I'm like, God damn, like, once again, Bo Nickel, you can learn a thing or two no, watching Kayla
and
Harrison.
You should be, and you should be learning. Yeah. You should be, this is how your fights should be going.
Yeah.
If you have bring that style to the table.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, so, big time. As far as, like, all the fighters that, like, as far as the, like, you know, raising the stock of what this card did for fighters, she has to be, you know, number two up there. Like, she has to, number three maybe, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
her stock has gone through the fucking roof with this fight.
Absolutely.
You know, and she's a bigger girl. She could go 35. She could go 45.
Yeah.
She could, you know, there. Nunez is already fucking posting videos about, like,
I know,
when are you going to call me out? Like, I'll come back and fight. Like, this is what we've been fucking needing, dude. We've been needing somebody like this for the women's division mm-hmm. to do this. And so I'm really happy. I'm really happy she could make the weight. I'm really happy she looked really good making the weight. I can't say anything more about it. Like, beforehand, I was like, huh, this is going to be bad news for Kayla. And now I'm just like, fuck, let's go, Kayla.
I know, you know, right?
Let's fucking go.
Can't wait to see your next fight.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we talked about it a little bit beforehand, but Aljo facing Calvin Kattar, doing what Aljo does best, you know, negating
it is. It,
Calvin
it is.
Kattar stand up, making Calvin fight Aljo's fight. Very unsuccessfully, like Aljo does, and taking the decision. This was probably the fight that, like, was, I don't want to say the most lackluster, but this was a definite down peak in the card. This was a point where fans were, like, booing, and a lot of people were like, but it's like, this is what Aljo does,
right?
You know, like,
well, when he decides to.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, that's
yeah.
the thing. Like, how many more wins do you think he'd have on his record if he decided to fight
fuck,
like that
more often?
Fuck,
he'd still have the
belt. He probably would. That's the thing. He probably would. But he wanted to play around too much and didn't respect
yeah.
Sugar Sean O'Malley and,
yeah.
and got knocked out. But you could tell he learned from that. You could tell he was moving up in weight class. And I thought Calvin Kattar's defense was going to be a little bit better than it was. But Aljamain didn't seem to have any problems getting him on the ground, controlling him. No, he didn't get a finish. But yeah, when Aljamain's on his game, he can out-grapple just about anybody.
I know. I know. I know. Exactly. Yeah, and he looked really good. This was his first fight at featherweight, so there
yep.
were a lot of questions with that. Looked really good. Didn't look like it was a problem. Did the same thing to the 145-pounder that he was doing to 135.
Yeah.
So, yeah, looked good. I'm, yeah, interested to see what ends up happening now. And they still have him ranked as number two in bantamweight.
Bantamweight,
yeah.
right.
So it's interesting. So he could go either which way he wants to. I would ride, I mean, not that it fucking matters what I think, but I think it'd be a better idea to ride out this featherweight.
Agreed.
And see what you could do. A lot more interesting matchups and the rest of it, and kind of let some things happen. You hold this number two position. You're the former champion at bantamweight. If at any point this featherweight thing doesn't work out, guess what? Boom, you're right back in there.
Well, you know? Never know how things go, right? Like, let's say he ends up. Because who knows what rank they're going to give him for beating Kattar.
Yeah.
But I think Kattar was like 8 or 7 or 8
yeah.
or somewhere around
there.
Well,
he's there. Ranked 8 now.
Okay.
Aljo is. Yeah.
Aljo's ranked 8 in featherweight.
Yeah.
Okay.
Featherweight.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you never know how these things go, right? Like, they set up a fight for Ilia Topuria. Somebody falls out. He answers the call.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say he gets a split decision over mm-hmm. Topuria by out-wrestling him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the opportunity to go back down and wait and rematch Sean O'Malley champ versus champ. You know what I'm saying?
Like, if O'Malley still has the belt.
If O'Malley still has the belt. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I expect that to happen. I don't think Aljamain has a ton of time left in the sport. Again, age at these higher weight classes or these lower weight classes tends to play a big factor, and he's getting up there. So I do think he needs probably one or two favorable matchups before fighting for a title. But again, you never know how these things can work out. Like, who accepts a fight? Who doesn't? Who drops out? Who gets injured? You know what I mean?
I know. And I don't want to get off on a tangent, but you really think that Sean O'Malley's going to beat Merab?
I do.
You do?
I do.
Okay.
I think he has way too much height and reach advantage for Merab to be as effective as he has been at that weight class. And when you're as good at distance management mm-hmm. and imposing that range mm-hmm. that you clearly have over most of your opponents, it's only going to be more so against Merab. I think Marab's going to end up taking too much damage before he finally is able to get inside and start working his game.
He could. He could. I just know that dude has shown already before that he can take a shit ton of damage.
He can.
And, you know, whereas in Aljo's case, he'd been, you know, knocked out, you know, before. And then you could even argue that Aljo wasn't even fully knocked out when they stopped the fight.
True.
But at least Aljo was on his back, which is more we can say for most of these fucking stoppages these days.
True. It's not O'Malley's power.
No, it's for, his for precision. Me,
it's
yeah.
his precision. No, it's exactly. his accuracy. Yeah. And it's his timing, yeah. right? And these are going to be the things. And plus, Merab is so short. I just, how can you not see him eating a knee at some point in this fight? You know what I'm saying? Like,
he's so short, he can crawl under the fucking knee, okay? Get from behind, okay? That's what I'm saying, all right? And the guy, he fights really smart, okay? He fights really smart. I give him a lot more credit. When he fought Henry Cejudo, I thought that Henry was going to give him a lot more problems than he did. And he right. was able to show a whole new level of wrestling and control and the rest of it that I was like, holy shit, this is crazy.
Yeah.
So as much as we were on the hype train for Aljo, like, oh, Aljo's going to give fucking Sean O'Malley some problems we haven't seen before, and it didn't work out that way, Merab, I believe, is going to give him some fucking problems.
Okay.
So we'll see.
Okay.
We don't need to get off on tape. Let's get back to 300. All right. Goddamn. Speaking of the next fight, Jesus Christ. So Jiří gets a performance of the night, beating Alexander Rakic. But, bro, he took way more punishment than he needed to.
Yeah.
You know what I'm yes. saying? And the whole time this is happening, we're like shouting. We're going crazy. You know, the whole first round, like, go forward. Hit him. Hit him with something. All Jiří wanted to do was keep getting leg kicked yeah. and punched once in a while and just like wait till the leg was getting swollen and then switch his leg position mm-hmm. and was standing there and just looking like he was just like frozen in right. time almost. And I was like, dude, what are you doing? Move forward. And we were like losing. Like I literally was like, dude, he's going to lose this fight by just not engaging at yeah, all. And a big part of that I think has to do with like him getting knocked out before and having to deal with that and come back and the rest of it, right? Because mm-hmm. some fighters, that's just what happens. Sometimes they get in there and they get trigger shy and they don't want to engage and they prefer to just be out here and take, you know, punishment instead of get involved and maybe get dropped again. And then as soon as he did, he fucking put it on him and got him out of there. And it was like, God, thank you.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's what Jiří brings to the table when he fights like that is he can make it dirty. He hits really hard. He yeah. can put anybody out.
Yeah.
But and I saw an interview that he put out a couple days ago where he talked about it. And he's like, you know, for a while there, for that first round and a half, I forgot to embrace the violence.
Oh.
Now, when Jiří does that, when he embraces the violence, that's what you get, right?
Yeah.
Because you're going to hit him. He's going to get hit.
Yeah.
But he's going to be throwing back and in your face and returning and throwing spinning shit. And
that's what I was going to say. It's not just throwing back, but he has a level of creative striking
yes.
that we usually only see in the smaller weight exactly. divisions when he gets into that flow state. And so as soon as he starts feeling himself, you don't know what's happening.
Exactly.
He's going to be spinning, throwing elbows from, I mean, it's just like anything fucking yeah. goes, you know? So like, yeah, I mean, exactly. And I'm glad he got this win. I'm glad he got this KO. I'm glad he's going to fucking move forward, embrace the fight. This is the Jiří that we need to see.
Yep.
You know? So.
Yeah, that's the full Jiří. That's yeah. that samurai is embrace the violence, go in there, kill or be killed.
Yeah.
And yeah, give us a show.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of not really given us much of a show. We finally get to
Cody gave us a show, right?
Yeah, Cody... And he took Bo Nickel into the second round, and he showed fucking major underdevelopment areas in Bo Nickel's game.
Right.
You know, and it's so crazy. On one hand, it's really crazy that somebody that can be that one dynamic can be, you know, in the UFC as such a hot prospect in 2024.
Right, right.
You know? But at the same time, it's like, this is how the UFC's been matching him up. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They've been, you know, they had him fight two or three fights on the Contender Series against these no-name, you know, people who don't have near the skill or the capability that he has to get there, to get that hype train going where everybody's like going for Bo. And then bring him in here and face these guys who nobody's heard of. And he got to Cody Brundage. And, you know, Cody did, you know, I don't know. To some people's extent, I guess he did more than what he thought. I thought that he could have probably even done more. I thought he could have engaged more on the feet when they were standing up. But, you know, needless to say, we got to see that when it goes to the ground, Bo Nickel's a fish out of water, and like just is his only concern is getting down and getting the rear naked choke,
right.
Figuring out how to get you down, get on your back, and get rear naked. That's always concerned.
Yes, he needs a more diverse tool belt, right? One of the things this fight showed me was that Bo Nickel doesn't possess a massive strength advantage over the other people in his weight division.
Yeah.
Right? Cody Brundage was able to shrug off
yep.
takedown attempts. He was able to meet him in the middle on some of these takedown and shrug him off. And he even like threw him off and almost threw him down that
yeah.
one time.
It yeah, was exactly. Like... Yeah. And the second part. Yeah. But that goes to show that it's, you know, his technical ability, right? Is
right.
that high. It's not a strength thing. Cause we didn't know. Cause he had fought, you know, I forget who it was before and dropped the guy with a power punch. So you get to the thing where you're like, damn, maybe this dude is just really right. strong too, but it's not,
right.
it's a clear technical advantage, you know, mm-hmm. and that can be negated. And there's a lot of things where I think that fighters are going to watch this moving forward and give Bo a lot of problems. And Bo now has to play that game of, you know, going to catch up. They already released Bo Nickel, like his next fight, who it's going to be. I forget who it is, but it's somebody that's like, you know, kind of down towards the bottom, trying to keep him on that, you know,
right.
perpetual motion where he was
right.
before, not give him anybody that's, you know, too high above him. And so it'll be interesting to see how what happens for Bo moving forward.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. Do you rush him into deeper waters, hoping that he learns more off of an eventual loss? Or do you keep stringing him along, hoping that his development gets steadily better with every fight, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you want to do that first and foremost. You want to, especially as the UFC, they want to keep him moving along at that thing, you know, at that kind of trajectory. It's the same thing they did with Conor, remember? They were giving Conor, I mean, at the time, Max Holloway wasn't Max Holloway. You
right,
know what I'm saying?
Right.
At the time, he was just some new kid coming in, and so
right.
they gave him, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, but at the same time, they kept him on this trajectory going up where they were like, okay, you think that you're showing a better performance, now we'll offer these veterans that are getting ready to leave and, you know, Dennis Seaver and whatever, and get you going on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't until he got, like, right up, you know, close to the title that they were like, okay, Aldo pulled out, so now you got to fight Mendes. And then cross fingers, and then like, okay, that worked. Okay, now, you
right,
know what I'm saying?
Right.
And kind of got him in there where they needed to. And so, yeah, they're going to play, you know, the conservative game like that for Bo Nickel and help him get to that. But at the same time, you know, Bo Nickel's got tons of resources, tons of not only support from, you know, his own camp and where he comes from, being this, you know, highly collegiate, one of the top collegiate, you know,
right.
wrestlers and whatever else. But the UFC, too, has a lot of money and a lot of, you know, hope in the guy. This guy's going to be getting, like, the best training and treatment that he can to
right.
get up to that spot. So, yeah, we'll have to see, you know.
It's always funny to me the people that they decide to push, right? Because they decide to push a guy like Bo Nickel, who, for all intents and purposes, does not have the most exciting fighting style.
No, but he's pale-skinned. You know, maybe that has
is
something
that
to do
what
with it.
Is?
I okay. don't know. Conor was pale skinned.
Well, okay,
I don't know,
because
so.
You could be pushing Diego Lopez, who's actually been steamrolling
but
opponents,
he's,
and
you
is
know,
an
Hispanic,
exciting
Latina. You know, so
okay. Well, okay. Well, there you go. That settles it.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm just saying. So it is.
No, there's a really good movie from back in the day with, God, I can't remember that fucking fool's name.
Damon Wayans?
Yes, Damon Wayans. Great White Hype.
Oh, yeah.
You ever see that?
Samuel Jackson?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
That's exactly what they do. Yeah. And I know it's like satire, but that's exactly what was kind of happening at boxing at the time. And here you go. You guess you just see it again, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. By and large, I guess the only thing I want to say about that is they do the same thing, and not just that, but in a lot of other aspects of business, there's a lot of money that's centered around, you know, the predominantly quote-unquote white, you know, that's usually people who have more money and whatever else in our society, and so if they can figure out a way to get those people to come up off their paychecks and get them involved, they will, and that's kind of, I think, the tie to it, you know, from a business sense. Anyways, we don't need to get into all that, but since we got there, that's where we're at, and now we'll just keep moving. So we got Charles Oliveira versus Armin Sarukian. Fucking great fight.
Great fight. Super high-level fight.
Yes, and told us a lot about both of these fighters. It was, yeah, just I mean, I was super impressed with this fight. We up to this point, Armin Sarukian hadn't really even been put into a submission danger in his whole UFC career. And he's fought some really high-level dudes. I mean, he fought Islam. He's fought, you know, he's fought some guys. And we knew coming in here against Charles Oliveira that Oliveira was probably going to take him to that spot. And he did twice. At the very beginning, Armin went for a fucking takedown, got put into a guillotine, and literally got choked out of his shorts.
Yeah.
You know, he literally had to crawl out of his own shorts to get to relieve the pressure from that guillotine because you're dealing with fucking the Bronx here, you know? And, you know, in the second round, he got that Darce choke where Armin used the proper defense by having your body go limp. As long as you don't tie up the opponent's leg, then defenses, you can have your body go limp, and then it relieves that pressure around your neck. And so it looked like he was out. And some people even watching were like, oh, he's out. But then as soon as the ref like went like that, he gave the thumbs up because he's not. He's relaxing his body, going straight, allowing the air to go through.
So that was the end of the third round.
Okay.
And I do think he was saved by the bell.
You think so?
I do, because Oliveira's that good. If he has a little bit more time, you know he finds a way to cinch that up and actually make him tap.
To crawl around to it. I was surprised that he hadn't. I was surprised that he wasn't trying to...
There was only 10 seconds. There was only 10, 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Left at the end of that fight when he finally got that. If he'd have gotten it a little bit earlier, yeah, I do think we'd be singing a different tune. I think Oliveira would have choked him unconscious.
Yeah. But to Armin's credit, he was able to negate Oliveira's entire guard by what was really impressive to me, not just keeping it chest to chest when he was in Oliveira's guard, which was preventing Oliveira from doing anything with his guard, but then he was landing pretty heavy ground and pound laying down. Most of the time that I've seen, in order to land that heavy style of ground and pound and really hurt your opponent like that, you need to posture up a little bit to get that range to get it going, right? Mm-hmm. That's always been the case. But even though he was chest to chest and giving him no way to move, he still was carving up his face and you know, really doing damage to Oliveira. And so I was really impressed with that as well.
He did a good job. Oliveira is a tough fight. He's dangerous everywhere. I think that fight was a lot closer than it looked just on the surface. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because you've got somebody who's capable of controlling the fight because you're fighting a high-level jiu-jitsu guy and he's comfortable off of his back. But you also have this guy coming really close to multiple different submissions and probably came closer to ending the fight.
Yeah.
So
no, and I would argue came close in both of those rounds, and you could have given him both of those rounds.
I wanted to.
Yeah, if you wanted to. And that could say something about the judging, because they were willing in the Andrade case to give her those when it got close to the stand-up finishes, but not in Oliveira's case when it got closer to the grappling finishes.
Right.
And maybe because, you know, there's the whole, like, yeah, it looks like it's close, but it's hard to tell. Whereas, like, when someone's, like, literally doesn't have their feet underneath them and they're getting fucking bounced around in the cage. It seems a lot more apparent.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I mean, how are you going to argue for one and not the other?
No, that's a good point. Like, because these things are so subjective, optics has a lot to do with
it. Oh, it's the whole thing, right?
Yeah. Right. And so you're absolutely right, especially when dude's face down in the DARS. And you can't really see what's going on, as opposed to Marina Rodriguez shelling up against the cage and getting hammered and looking visibly wobbled gets hit.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Those optics, they play a lot into it. I mean, it's hard to tell exactly how much damage is being, you know, done because it is so subjective. But those optics are going to have a lot to do with it anytime there's these scenarios. You know?
100%. And, I think, and we're going to get to it here in a minute, but, like, I think with someone like, Alex Pajeda, how stoic he looks a lot of times. Like, this is a guy who's, like, grown up at the highest level of kickboxing. And so it's like you learn that as like a way of dealing, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. To not show emotion.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because of that, even when you're really hurt. So that's why it's funny now, because whenever there's these like real personal moments where it's just like, you know, oh, he could be happy or oh, he could be. And he's just like real stone faced about it. And people are like, damn, this dude's like a psycho killer. It's like, that's something that's like ingrained in there because it's such an optic heavy thing of being like not showing, and not only the judges, but your opponent.
Exactly.
You don't want to show your opponent you're hurt, because then your opponent's going to bring it on to you when you're really hurt. You
it so. Gives them that mental advantage
or any
kind of motivation, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, confidence.
Yeah. And it's a confidence killer. You hit somebody as hard as you can and it looks like it didn't change them. Then you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
So, I mean, it plays a better part into your advantage all the way around to not show any emotion, not show any kind of, you know.
That's so, and not to get off on another tangent here, but that's one of my favorite interviews in boxing was the George Foreman interview about the Ali fight, right? Because everyone talks about the rope-a-dope and how brilliant this thing was. And you start talking to George Foreman about it, and he's like, well, there's a little bit to that. He's like, but here's the thing. I knew I was hurting him. Mm-hmm. I knew I was winning this fight. But there was a point, I think, in the eighth round where he had him up against the ropes, and the body positioning was perfect, and his positioning was perfect. He's like, and I did, and I landed the greatest shot. I felt it. I felt it in my hand. I felt it in my elbow. I felt it in my shoulder. I hit him so hard, and I go into clinch, and Ali says to me, is that all you got, boy? And he's like, and that's when I lost the fight, was at that point, because that was all I got.
Yeah.
He's like, that really was all I got. And even though I was winning, and if I'd have been smarter, I fought smarter, I probably still could have won that fight. Those are the type of mental warfare things that can take you completely out of a fight.
Yeah, and we've talked about this, you know, in long part before, but, like, fighting is completely mental. I mean, everything is completely mental. Everything that happens, whether or not it's in the physical realm or whatever, is all up in your own mind and how that all engages, right? And so, yeah, it's 100% mental. And so, yeah, if you can go in there and fight somebody in the mental warfare, I mean, that's a big part of why Conor was really successful too, because he would take his opponents and have these mental warfare battles with them even before the fight happened, you know, and put that pressure and get them to fight against themselves when you're in there trying to fight him too. And so, I mean, it's all mental. It's really all mental. So, yeah.
So, speaking of mental warfare, Gaethje and Holloway.
This was more physical warfare.
It was, but the reason why I want to touch on that is because, like, we're watching this fight unfold, and an absolute masterclass by Max Holloway, first of all.
Yeah.
Like, fought one of the cleanest fights I've ever seen him fight or anybody fight, which is saying a lot for Max Holloway, because we've seen some amazing performances from Max Holloway. But to not get hit cleanly for as long as he avoided getting hit, but Justin Gaethje, who's really good at finding that mark, and to be able to find his shots so well, so consistently for such a part of that fight, we had talked about it. We knew the leg kicks were going to be a factor. As we're watching the fight, we're listening to the commentary, they're saying the leg kicks are a factor.
For the first round, it was.
It was a factor for the entirety of the fight. It really was. And after the fight, when Max doesn't have to play that mental warfare anymore, he'll tell you. Even yesterday I was watching, he's like, no, they're still fucked up. It's awful.
Yeah.
But in that fight, guess what he didn't do? He didn't let on for even a half a second
any of those leg kicks anything. Sorry. And because he didn't, that's why Gaethje stopped going to the leg kicks. Because in the first round, that's where he was delivering the damage, was with those leg kicks. And you could see that it was like swollen up at Max's legs. You're just like, God, how many more of these can he take? I think he took like 8 or 10 in the first round uninterrupted, and you're just like, God damn. And then the second round, he took less, and then by the third round, Gaethje was like, no, I'm not even going to be throwing leg kicks anymore, and Gaethje got into the sock and bopper, you know. But a big part of that is two things. One, Max being able, we talked about this beforehand, I was big, like a lot of people were, on Justin Gaethje and didn't like this fight initially for Max Holloway because of the power, because of there were other aspects of the fight, you know, the leg kicks and stuff that we were just like, and because we had seen Max have performances of recent that were, you know, kind of like, is Max kind of like past this point,
right?
You know, and so all that was kind of looming in there. And then, you know, a day or two out before the fight, I started, because me and you had discussions, and you were like, I think it's going to be a lot closer than that. And I was like, you're fucking smoking crack. And then, you know, and then we went back and forth. And then I was like, fuck, I realized, like, this dude is fast at the lighter weight division, at featherweight. He's fast for those guys, for those strikers. He's going to be really fast, and his reaction time is going to be really good against the, you know, against the heavier weight opponents. So I was like, that was something to take into consideration. While I'm watching the fight, I'm realizing, like, as much as I like Justin Gaethje, right, he is still, his striking is still, like, you know, rudimentary, as in, like, leg kick, power punch, maybe a couple punches combo, right?
Right,
find that good punch, land it. Max is boxing 101, right? Sticking you with the jab, sticking you with the jab. As soon as Gaethje would go to block and put up his blocks, he'd be like, okay, and then he would work in the hooks.
Yeah.
Strike with the hook, boom, and land him, boom. So, and then move out of the way, so by the time Justin goes to throw back, Max isn't even there.
Exactly.
I mean, literally just plotting him around and doing that, and I was watching it, and I was just like, not only with the speed being the factor, but, like, literally the technical ability or whatever you want to say, where it's just like, but that's who Justin Gaethje was. Jason Gaethje, right, his whole career was like, I'll take one and deliver, you know, one harder. You know, that's constantly like, I'll take your punch and you can take my punch. And kind of go, and he had wars throughout the World Series of Fighting into the UFC. And then as he got into the UFC and that didn't really work out, and he's been knocked out before, which is something that, you know, a couple of times, which is something that we're going to talk about here in a minute. But that left that in input, and he began to fight smarter, where he would work the leg kick and then work the power punches in. And then, you know, in his fight against Dustin, he got in the head kick. And so it looked like his game had been evolving. But when he fought Max, you got to see, no. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It really hadn't. It had evolved more for the guys that he was fighting in his division, especially the guys of his time, right, in that same generation. But, like, Max has been fighting the younger guys. Max has been fighting, like, all over the place. Like, Max has this skill set that will work at these higher levels because of this. And so he just, it was a total tooling on Justin Gaethje. And I was more surprised to see that than I was to see Justin Gaethje get knocked out, to be honest with you. So
no, absolutely. And not to take anything away from Justin Gaethje, because he is good, and what he has been doing has been working, but he's been working on his timing, not necessarily the variation of his combos, but knowing that he can take your punch and hitting you when you're coming in. And because of his power, it equalizes, so that changes your offensive game plan, right? But he wasn't able to land that clean shot when Max would come in, because Max was too smart. His footwork was too good. And not only that, but Max does have a lot of variation on his combos.
Yep.
So when he's setting you up with the jab, and then he's mixing in the 1-2, and then you go to shell up, and like you said, he starts working in the hooks, but then you decide to eat it and try and catch him when he's coming in, and then you miss those shots. But Max doesn't get so far out of the way that he can't return. Like, he's still throwing 3, 4, 5 punch combos. So when you're done and you're trying to get back out, you're still getting hit.
Oh, of course.
And that was where so much of that damage, that's where he was actually hurting Gaethje. Because Gaethje was like, okay, here's how the flow of these engagements I feel like should go. And then, you know, Max would come in and throw, and then he would throw, and maybe he'd land or glance off. But then he'd try to come out and reset, but he's still getting hit by Max. And those were the ones when he's trying to come back out of the pocket and reset, that's when Max is still throwing these combos and still landing. That's when you could tell he was actually getting hurt and getting wobbled a couple of times throughout that fight.
Yeah, exactly. And really, you know, his timing being able to time, you know, Max being faster and, you know, the inability really to time it on a lot of those engagements by Gaethje was why Max was able to not get hit so rarely against him, avoid a lot of those like more powerful shots. But then when he did take that one, I don't remember where it was, must have been like in the third or fourth round when he got dropped.
When he got dropped, yeah.
And that was because of it. Because literally, like, Max stood in there just 1 second too, half a second too long and fucking just hit him and dropped him. And it was like, and then, you know, it was that whole thing. It was like, oh shit, did he catch him? But then Max, you know, reset and everything was good. And so, yeah. And then heading in to the end, you know, a lot about, you know, Max putting on the show and, you know, calling him out to the middle of the ring and them going back and forth and him catching Gaethje. To me, like it was awesome. And I don't want to undermine it at all. It's just, sometimes I'm like, dude, does anybody like watch these other fights? Cause like, that's what Max like does.
Exactly. Right?
Max has done that like his whole career. He'll be like, nope, let's fucking go in the middle and let's fucking throw down.
Yeah.
And so he, you know, did the same thing with Gaethje, and Gaethje to this point really had nothing to offer him. I mean, it had been rounds for him to, of punishment. And then when he got dropped and got put out, it was just like, you know, like fucking hats off to him. Like, yeah, it was awesome. It was an awesome performance. I won't take anything away from Max. I really think now being able to see a lot better of his skill set at this weight division, I really would look forward to seeing Max continue at lightweight. The same thing. Max is number two. The exact same thing like Aljo. He's number two at the featherweight division. I'd love to see him, you know, fight some more at the lighter weight. There's a lot more interesting matchups. There's a lot more, you know, whatever. But the whole Topuria fight, it only makes sense that, you know, Max hadn't fought Topuria before. There's some questions there. Max now having the BMF title could take the BMF title to the featherweight division, maybe unify the belts, and what necessarily that would be. It would almost be like boxing. They'd have, you know, they'd come in with these multiple belts in the same organization kind of thing. Pretty interesting. There's a lot of thoughts that I have of that. I'm not really wanting to get into any of that right now because that's going to be a fucking full can of worms. I already know. But hopefully they make that match sooner just because, for all intents and purposes, I think it's better for both guys if they do that fight sooner. I think it's better for Max if they do that fight sooner, and I think it's better for Ilya Topuria if they do that fight sooner.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
so biggest Max fan. I've been a Max fan for so long. You know, he went on that tear before getting the belt, the way he smoked Aldo two times in a row. Like, this guy's resume is supremely impressive, and again, there's so much I could say. I could talk at great length about individual performances, his overall body of work, all these things. But the reason why I don't want him to stay at 155 as much is because I feel like there's better wrestlers at 155 than there are at 145.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you negate that type of offense from Max.
No, you're true. I mean, a big part of it.
And they're bigger guys. Yeah. You know, these are like you came up in weight to make 155, but there are guys that could probably be fighting at 170 cutting to 155, and they're great wrestlers. So, and again, biggest Max fan ever, love Max. I'm not favoring him against Islam in a fight, or even necessarily Sarukian, right?
I see what you're saying. I do. The thing is, though, you're right. But the thing is that, like, fucking dude, Max is fucking fast. His reaction time, he's fucking super skilled. And you're right. As much as I see those being big problems too, but I also see he offers something at this weight division that most, if not all, these other fighters can't offer. You know what I'm saying? To the rest of this competition. And so because of that, and because he's been fighting forever at 145 and he has this tool belt and this reaction time of the rest of it, it's just like, you know, I would hate for him to go down, lose the belt to Topuria, and then come up and then not be successful at lightweight. Because, you know what I'm saying?
Right. And so the reason why I say that is because I do favor Max in a Topuria fight.
I know. Still. I know you do.
Like, I know Topuria now has this confidence, and now he's got the belt, and I don't want to take anything away from his skill set, mm-hmm. but this is one of those mindsets you get into when people think they can fight Max Holloway at Max's game. You can't. Like, how many times have we seen somebody, even the Arnold Allen fights, even some of these other fights where you're just like, you know, if you'd have made a bigger attempt to go for takedowns, you probably would have had a better shot. But you didn't because you thought he wasn't as good as he was, or you were better than you were at this, and you're not, is the thing.
You're right, and you do make a good point there. And I appreciate you trying to bait me into this like conversation. But I feel like I want to save this because I feel like this is most likely the fight that's going to happen, and we need to have this conversation about it. But what I will what I will offer right now is that the strengths that Temporia brings from the stand-up aspect is unlike what Max has fought before. This is a different level of it. What he's able to do in the pocket, being able to avoid the shots that he can with the punishment, with the power that he has, this is different. This is a different level than what he's faced. He's not like any of these other guys.
I feel like I've heard that before. So many times people try to go fight Max Holloway.
I know.
I feel like these are word for word the same things we said about the Gaethje fight. I feel like we said these things about Yair Rodriguez.
But those are different fighters, okay? What Yair offers from a strength-wise isn't the same of what Tempere offers. Boxing is their biggest strength, both of these guys, of their stand-up in the clinch game. How they operate, how Max operates off the jab and then opening up things versus how Tempere is in that close battle. I'm just saying, we're going to have this conversation. Okay. And when we do, we will dissect it completely because I feel like this is a mirror image of both. I feel like I'm a big Max fan, you're a bigger Max fan. I feel like I'm a big Tempore fan, and you're a Tempore fan.
I love that.
I know, and I feel like what's going to end up happening when these two fight, we're going to end up needing to see, but I don't want to have this conversation now. Okay. So right. Let's just leave it there. Okay. All right. So moving on, we have two more fights left on this UFC 300 card. We had Zhang Weili defending her title against Yan Xiaonan. A lot of people really surprised.
I was so excited for this fight.
Yeah, a lot of people were so surprised that Yan Xiaonan was able to put on the performance that she had. A lot of people, including the odds makers. I mean, Zhang Weili was like one of the biggest odds, favorite odds, next to like Bo Nickel on this card.
I wasn't
surprised, motherfucker.
I mean, I was surprised at how that fight went down. I was really excited for this fight because I've seen Zhang Weili. She's an incredibly skilled fighter. She's incredibly strong at that weight class.
Yep.
She's improved leaps and bounds. Over
really
when she
well
came
rounded
in.
Out her game.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I really like her, but we've seen her get knocked out before.
Yes.
You know, we've seen Rose Namajunas not only knock her out,
yeah,
but then beat her pillar to post in a rematch,
yeah,
right? Okay. And Yan Xiaonan, maybe the lesser known quantity because we've seen her with less fights, but she's been no less impressive.
Oh, no.
Right? She's been able to find her shots. Work really good on the feet, has great footwork, has decent defensive wrestling. I mean, when you don't see it get tested, you know, you don't really know how good it is.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
But I didn't expect the fight to play out the way it did. Yan Xiaonan was really effective on the feet.
Dude.
More effective than I thought she would be.
Yeah. I wasn't. I was super surprised. After that last fight that she had, after Yan Xiaonan's, I've been watching her whole time, and I've been seeing her trajectory. She started as a wrestling-heavy, you know, fighter, and then developed this overhand right, but the footwork with it was just, like, right there with it. And so when she fought Andrade, I was like, okay, this is going to be a good skill. This is going to be good to see where she's at with it, how far her stand-up striking is, because Andrade is short, compact. She's going to be coming after her. And she took Andrade and fought Andrade's fight and then set her up in traps and made her walk into it and capitalized on it and took her out in the first round. And so I was like, holy shit, her game has come really far. This is my thing. I wasn't surprised that she continuously dropped Zhang Weili through the fight. I wasn't surprised at all with that. What I was surprised to see was that, like, it was apparent that Yan really looks up, had a lot of respect for Zhang Weili.
Right.
She did. She hurt her, but when she hurt her, she'd let her get back up, she'd let her reset, and then they would move forward with it. Zhang Weili was not doing that to Yan. As soon as she could capitalize on it, she would get
right
to that position, and she tried to finish her a couple different times.
Right.
Got really close. I mean, she fucking put her to sleep at the fucking end of the round. Her body went stiff, you know, and right, they fucking right stopped it, and then she woke back up, yeah, and they put smelling salts in her in the corner or whatever, if that was legal or not. But it wasn't like,
smelling salts.
Okay, well, whatever it was. Maybe, you know.
It wasn't anything.
He let him smell his finger, whatever it was.
That's
okay?
That's what it was.
Okay, but still, taking my takeaway from this fight is that the fucking next version, the next time we see Yan Xiaonan, she's going to be a whole lot hell better, because she fought the person that was like the first Chinese, not only champion, the first Chinese woman champion, right?
Yeah.
Zhang Weili, she had nothing but respect for her when they were doing the pre-fight weigh-ins and the ceremonial stuff. She brought the, you know, Chinese flag and wanted to hold it up with both of them, and Zhang Weili walked off and she was still holding the Chinese flag because right, she was, you know what I'm saying? Like, you could tell this was like major for her. And having this fight and being able to go the full distance with the champion and be able to experience all that, the ground when she was taken on the ground and being dominated there from the ground and pound and from the submission, all that. Going forward, when we see Yan Xiaonan fight, dude, she's going to be a fucking killer. And if these two fight again...
They will.
I'm fucking betting on Yan.
No, they absolutely will. And I thought it would be a good fight. And like I said, I was really excited for it. It was one of the fights I was most excited for on the card. Not just for what it meant to China or women's Chinese fighters, but just because of that matchup.
Yeah.
What surprised me was I didn't think Yan Xiaonan would be that much better on the feet, and I didn't think Zhang Weili would be that much better on the ground. That was the thing. It was such a tale of two different fights all within a fight, right? Yeah. Because Yan definitely held a huge advantage on the feet. She was able to catch her. She was able to land not just that clean jab, but to know exactly when to throw that right hand and land it clean, which she did over and over. And like you said, I didn't expect Zhang Weili to be able to be that dominant on the ground. Which she was. Whenever she went for a takedown, she got it. She was able to advance position. She was able to land damage, and you know, props to her for for keeping the fight where she needed it to be in order to get that victory. I thought it would be closer. I thought Zhang would be a little bit better on the feet than she ended up being, and I thought Yan would be a little bit better on the ground than she ended up being.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess I was also impressed with Zhang Weili's ground to a certain level. The thing was Yan's whole wrestling career or fighting career and the wrestling aspect of it, she's always really good at getting the takedown and then holding the opponent down, doing ground and pound, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Getting the finish from that position. We hadn't seen her really be threatened to a high level. So when Zhang Weili took her down, I was like, oh, okay. Like, you know what I'm saying? This is still... You know, this is still an area where she has problems, because there's not really that kind of high level wrestling in the women's female strawweight division. So, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I was impressed, but I wasn't like surprised. I was like, oh, okay. Zhang Weili's game has come a long way, and it makes sense, because a lot of times, especially with wrestlers, they're good at being the hammer, not so much running from the back.
Right.
Right. That's like a jiu-jitsu type, you know what I'm saying? And so I was like, okay, like this all makes sense. But yeah, I mean, the stand-up, I knew if Zhang was fucking coming forward and, you know, going to throw down with Weili, that she would be capitalizing, she was going to be able to hurt her, and like I'm saying, if they have this fight again the second time, I don't think that Yan's going to be paying her as much respect, and when she does hurt her, she's going to be fucking going after her to get the finish.
Right.
So... that's all I'm saying. So, but it was an awesome fight, and I'm really glad I got to see it. And it was another one of these fights. For some reason, it's always these female fights that a lot of people were like, "Oh, you're putting that fucking fight on the fucking card?" And I was just like, "Man, y'all are smoking crack. Like, this is gonna be a fucking awesome fight." And it was. It was an awesome fight. So, yeah, hats off to both of them.
I mean, I get why people would say that about the women's fights.
Yeah,
like maybe
would.
It shouldn't be as high up on the card.
Yeah,
maybe it shouldn't be co-main event. But this is one of the rare women's fights that delivered, okay? I'm just fucking with you.
I know. So anyways, let's get to it. Let's get to speaking of masterclasses. How do you put on a masterclass in fucking, you know, less than 2 minutes? You know, fucking.
Just like that.
Dude, so fucking sick. Alex Bejeda fucking knocking out Jamal Hill. Yeah, amazing. I mean,
like, probably one of the most cold-blooded sequences of events I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We've seen some cold knockouts. We've seen some impressive performances. But, yeah, so throughout the very short course of this fight, you've got trading leg kicks and hand fighting with the lead hand, yeah, right? Which is more apparent in this fight than others because you have somebody that fights orthodox and somebody that fights southpaw, right? So you got lead hand versus lead hand. And what's interesting to me is, like, because we watch it live and we see it unfold, and then we go back and we watch analyses and we watch it in slow-mo, and I'm watching this fight again, and I start to see these things that Jamal thinks he's doing, and he thinks he's doing well, when that's not actually what's happening. It's Alex Bejeda allowing him to do that,
yep,
so that he can, like, just like every fight you see with Alex Bejeda, just like, watch out for that left hook, you know what I'm saying? Like, and so this is the only thing that Alex Bejeda does for the first minute of this fight is like, okay, leg kick, leg kick. Okay, leg kick, leg kick. But for Alex Bejeda, it's not, these aren't the same leg kicks that he's throwing when he wants to cripple your leg,
yeah,
and score points. These are, okay, I see what you're doing. Here's one back. But it's really to maintain that dominant foot stance,
mm-hmm,
right? To keep it on the outside so that he doesn't get moved to the inside and allow Jamal to have the outside. So he keeps doing it, and he keeps slowly keeping that that lead foot on the outside so that he has the position. And then he's allowing him to focus on this left hand because, you know, Jamal knows it's coming. It's like, hey, you got to, yeah, watch out for the left hook,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so he's like, okay, well, here it is. I'll let you, yeah, you can grab onto my hand, and this is where it's going to be, and we can do the pawing, mm-hmm, and we can do this thing. And so when the knockout comes, it's no surprise. I mean, in hindsight, it's no surprise. Like, when we're watching it live, mm-hmm, we're just like, oh, shit. But when you watch it unfold and you watch it in slow motion, you see that it's exactly what he was waiting for. He wanted Jamal to think that his hand was right here and it wasn't going anywhere because he knew that he didn't have to wind up to throw it. He could throw it right here from this hand fighting position, right, and still get the knockout.
Yeah. No, and I knew 90% sure that Alex Bejeda was going to knock out Jamal,
yes,
Hill.
Yeah,
I was telling,
yeah,
everybody.
Exactly.
Because what Jamal Hill's strength is in a kickboxing type MMA style of fighting. He fights long. He keeps people at range. He has power on his strikes. And so I knew that facing somebody like Alex Bejeda, who is, like, technically way superior to that, right?
Right.
It's not an MMA guy that's learned boxing and facing another MMA guy. This is a MMA guy that's you know, really done well to improve his kickboxing, facing a high-level kickboxing world champion.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, these are two different fucking things here, you,
yes,
know? And so I already knew, but what I didn't know, and shout out to fucking Luke Thomas for his breakdown, because it blew my mind, was, like you said before, Alex knows, because Jamal Hill is a striker, what he's going to be looking for. He,
right,
knows how he's going to be setting up his tempo. He knows how he's going to be, you know, doing this. So he's setting, like, fucking master chess level fucking traps for him by the touching of the paw and being able to set the rhythm of it and then engage with him on off of those rhythms and a little bit off of them to set up this mental, to send these mental signals to Jamal Hill. This is when I'm going to go. This is what I'm going to be doing. So Jamal Hill is looking to set this up. He's,
right,
he's getting this feedback from the touching and where Alex is hitting him with the leg kicks, with the body strikes, with the rest of it, to be like, okay, this is where this is happening. The whole time, not realizing that Jamal Hill is doing this to set him off to set up his, yeah, whole. He's literally taking him down this path to be like, this is what we're going to do. This is what,
yeah,
we're going to do. While he's fucking holding on to this in the other hand. And then once it gets to the level of engagement, Jamal Hill goes for a body kick and he hits him on the cup, right?
Yeah.
And Herb Dean goes in to stop it. And Alex Pereira waves him off. He's like, nope, nope, nope. Because he knows. He knows that within the next 10 seconds that this fight is over, okay?
Yeah.
And so he tells him, no, no, no. And then, you know, they go to do the same thing again with the whole pawing, touching thing. And then he backs up Jamal Hill to the cage. So he knows Jamal Hill cannot go any further backwards. So he has to come forward. He can go out to the side, but he has to come forward. And so he sets up to, he grabs Jamal Hill's hand
yes.
to let Jamal Hill send the signal. He's holding my hand. He's going to come with the right straight down exactly. the pike. So Jamal Hill steps back to land a really strong left right down the pipe to counter mm-hmm. the right that's coming in. But that's not what he's doing.
No, no.
What he does is he pulls his hand down and then shovel hooks him with the left hook, not realizing it, hits him in the on that side, on the right side of his face. When he's looking for it coming from the left, drops him, and that's why when he turns around and looks up at him, he's scared, because he never fucking saw it coming. He thought everything was telling him that this is going to be coming from this side, this is what we're going for. He engaged with it, and then boom, you get hit from yeah. the other side. Like, what the fuck was that?
Yes.
And that's why he was so scared when he looked at him. And Alex, being the fucking professional striker that he is, didn't give him 1 second, jumped on him and fucking ground and pounded him, nasty ground and pound
nasty.
Until he was out, until the ref jumped in there to save him.
Yeah.
I mean, just no. so fucking superior.
Yeah.
When I saw that fucking breakdown of what exactly happened in that sequence, my mind was literally blown. I was just like, when they talk about levels to this shit, it's like, Jesus fucking Christ. You know what I'm saying? This whole thing, the whole fight that took place in
right.
Jamal Hill's head, when we talk about mental yes. warfare of what this is and how it physically got translated, that's what this was. I mean, literally the whole thing was in his own mind, and that's why he was just like, you know, and then even now Jamal Hill's like, you know, it's crazy how he's like, oh, I'm not going to say anything. All I'm going to say is that, you know, you got to defend yourself at all times. Like this whole thing with the kicking of the cup and him shrugging it off, like that was supposed to be, you know, because there's this hype of that, like, oh, because Herb Dean didn't stop it, that Herb Dean screwed over Jamal Hill because of that. Which, if you've watched any MMA fights for any period of time, you know that the guy that gets kicked, you know, or gets hurt from that strike gets to decide what I want to do. Sometimes
yeah.
they stop and they get 5 minutes. Sometimes they reject and they say, no, 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 I'm good, and it continues.
They wave it off all the time. I'm telling you, every other card I see, it's like a nut shot, it's a grazing shot, whatever, and he waves it off and says, I'm good, and there's no break in the action, and we continue to go. This is not something that has never happened before.
No.
It happens quite a bit.
Yeah.
What I liked about it, what made it so cold-blooded for me, was that the like usually the fighter looks at the ref
mm-hmm.
and does the wave
and even maybe, like, you know, does this thing where he stops like the engagement and rechecks himself and
right.
does this whole thing, and then he's like, okay, and then they do the whole thing.
Right. But Pereira's eyes never leave
nope.
Jamal.
Nope.
And it wasn't just a wave off. Like, he literally puts his hand on Herb and is like, dude, get
the fuck back.
Right?
Yeah. Something's about to happen here.
Yeah, something's yeah. way, yeah, really about to happen. And so when you know it's high level, when you go into these fights and you're just like, hey, you got to watch out for Pereira's left hook. How come he keeps being able to land that left hook? It's because when you're that high level and you know you have that shot, you find ways to put that in there, to set up that shot, to trap people, to draw them into that shot.
Yeah.
And you're right when you say Jamal never saw it coming, not just because of the sequence of events that led up to that and how he led him to believe, like that whole timing thing. Like, you don't see many fighters do that.
No.
And even fighters that you do see do that don't even necessarily do it intentionally. That's just how their mind works. They're a little herky-jerky. They have that kind of unorthodox, like, their mind doesn't have that rhythm. Whereas people that train standard stand-up and boxing techniques, you just develop that rhythm. Like, mm-hmm. you do the speed bag. That's mm-hmm. all about rhythm.
Yeah.
Like, you know, all these combos you set up. But you're right. That's exactly what Pereira did, was intentionally disrupt that timing and show you rhythm, 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 and then this half step.
Yep.
Right? And But it's not even just that. It's where he threw that shovel hook from.
I know.
Like, he didn't, like, it wasn't, didn't come from his waist, didn't come from the shoulder. There was no windup. It came from halfway the distance between the two fighters.
Yes.
It was already there halfway between his shoulder and Jamal's shoulder.
He just grabbed Jamal's hand.
So he didn't
hand.
Even think it was a threat.
No, he grabbed Jamal's hand, pulled it down, and then shoved it right up. But he needed to, because if he would have pulled it back to land any more impact, it would have taken the timing away, and he would have been able to see it. Exactly. All Jamal saw was his hand here get pushed down, and boom, he gets hit.
Yes.
Literally like that. Like, what the fuck was that? Like, I mean, but that's what I'm saying, is that, like, it's not, you know, power does have its aspects and the rest of it, but it's like, man, like, when you have that much control over, you know, your strengths and over, you know, where you're strong at in the fight, especially against fighters who, you know, see themselves as being well-skilled in those environments. Dude, after seeing this, I'm like, dude, people are talking about, oh, what if Para fought heavyweight? I'm like, dude, it's fucking bad news for heavyweight. Okay? No, exactly. They're fucking slower than the fucking, the light heavyweight.
Exactly.
Like, it's fucking bad news. I'm like, people are like, oh, like, even Dana, when they were like, oh, he wants to fight Tom Aspinall, do you want to see that? And he's like, oh, I think we need to slow down. I'm like, why? Why would we need to slow down?
Right.
This dude,
right.
I mean, he's like the Anatoly Malakin of our fucking, or Malakin of our, of the UFC.
Yeah.
Like, this dude was the middleweight champion. He's the light heavyweight champion. Fucking put him in there against heavyweights. Yeah, they throw harder. They're way slower. And I guarantee you that their level of striking isn't fucking close. Like, let's fucking go. Let's see this shit. You know, it's just like, Jesus
Christ. The other thing it does is it puts these things, like, when you move up like that and you perform like that, and then you want to go up into that next weight class, it kind of pisses off these other fighters, right? So whoever you get matched up with, they try to make this point, and then they try and stand with you.
Yeah.
Which is not what you should be doing with a guy that's that high level.
It's
you know
the
what I'm saying?
Last thing you
like,
want to do.
Like there needs to be, as much as you want to prop yourself up and give yourself this
show them what these heavyweights are about.
I know, and you do want to do that, but at the same time, you have to respect your opponent and respect their strengths. And you have to just accept the fact that he's going to find a way to land this.
Yeah.
So anything you can do to avoid that, which probably isn't going to be standing up.
100%.
Because he's going to find that shit.
100%. Yeah, exactly. And just because everything is positives and negatives, just because his strength is this max level on the stand-up, where is his ground game? Where is his submission game?
Would we ever know? Because nobody seems to want to test him.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I know exactly. But that's what I'm saying. If you're this guy's opponent going forward, that's what you need to be doing. You need to be taking him in places where you know he's not going to be setting these fucking master traps for you.
You have to at least try.
I know.
Like maybe we find out he's been killing it in practice.
Yeah.
And has great takedown defense.
Yeah.
Maybe. But you have to give it a try.
I know exactly, because you know what's going to happen. Stand up, especially. Yeah, at a higher weight division, the level of weight between middleweight to light heavyweight, right, is 15 pounds,
right?
But from light heavyweight up to heavyweight, that's 65 fucking pounds. We're talking levels of fucking weight there. These guys are going to be so much slower. That's also why having a career at heavyweight and being in your late to mid 30s or even in your 40s is like totally fine.
Exactly.
Heavyweight, as opposed to being in the lighter weight divisions.
Yeah.
Because of that. Because the speed that's going to kill you is not apparent there.
Exactly.
And so guys just get big bulk up and hit each other as hard as they can. And whoever fucking can survive and hit the other guy first, that's who wins. That's what heavyweight MMA has been for a fucking long time. You bring in somebody with this level of striking ability, it's going to cancel that out. They're going to need to fucking take this guy into a different realm and figure out where is he at in these other aspects of the game. That's the only way it makes sense.
Yeah.
And I don't give a shit who it is. I mean, we could look at the fucking, at the ranking division right now. Not that the heavyweights are fucking, you know, that, but like, dude, fucking have him fight fucking Jones. Like, have him fight fucking champion versus champion.
Yeah.
I'm down to see it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, let's fucking see it, John. So like, whatever. I'm a little bit over on the hype train, but I'm just saying, like, you know, like,
no,
I think I don't understand why the UFC would take the gas off now.
Right.
What do they have to lose?
Exactly. You don't have anything to lose. There's nowhere to go but up as long as you push this and ride this till the wheels fall off. Again, because not only does Alex have a huge, long career, but he's been knocked out before. He's been in wars, and he's getting up in age. let's ride this until the wheels fall off and see how far we can go.
Exactly.
He ends up being the greatest combat fighter of all time, or he has a decent career, gets two belts, and ends up, it stops at heavyweight. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, yeah, either way. But that's what I'm saying. I could see in a very realistic world, in a dimension that is very much a part of this one that we live in, I could see him going up, facing Tom Aspinall, putting Tom Aspinall down, because Tom Aspinall thinks he's fast for fucking heavyweights.
That's the thing,
taking Tom Aspinall out, and then having it be the light heavyweight champion moving up to heavyweight to face the former light heavyweight GOAT, now the heavyweight champion. I mean, UFC, I'm doing your fucking business for you, okay? Jesus Christ, like, just fucking do it, dude.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing? So,
well, this is the thing. Like, you know, Paeta's not going to say no to that.
Oh, fuck no. This is his whole thing. This dude does not care. It's not even about accolades. It's about the rest of it. It's about literally, like, testing himself and on this path trying to put up any kind of obstacles he can and overcoming that. That's why this guy, he doesn't take anything personal. None of his opponents are personal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's completely, even Israel with their great rivalry, he still is just like, yeah, like, whatever with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just like, man, like, yeah, like, that's the completely solid mental game for the highest level physical game that you can bring in. I mean, that, yeah, like the epitome of it. So I'm all for it. And I don't know what the fuck the UFC, this is what the UFC is like, we've got this fucking Miocic Jones fight that we're betting the fucking house on. We're going to stop the heavyweight division and anything else so we can get this fucking fight to happen. The chances of this shit happening are fucking really unlikely. And by the time they have it happen, I don't even want to fucking see it. Miocic isn't fucking fighting. Jones isn't even fucking fighting now. What are we doing?
I know. I'm over it now. Any little bit, and not that I was like all aboard for it, and even in the first place, but you know, it's like McGregor Chandler. It's like, dude, do I even fucking care anymore?
I know.
Like, I really don't.
I know.
You know?
I don't care either. But yeah, hopefully they'll pull their head out of their asses. I don't know. Even if they don't, doesn't matter. Fucking yeah. So, a lot with this card, which is why we took this whole time just to do this one card. There was a lot of talk back and forth. There was, you know, new levels of pettiness by the UFC as far as, like, you know, going at fucking people. And there were a lot of fucking crazy shit said about this card. We've even gone at some of the fucking fan and fucking media shit that was said about this card leading up to it. There was a lot. A big part of it, let's be honest, a big part of it is when you fucking promise people the entire world and you can't live up to it, there's gonna be some dissatisfaction. There's gonna be people being like, well, what the fuck? Why? Blah, 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 blah. Like, it's understandable. To the level that to the level that they were trying to sell this card as beforehand, to what it ended up being, like, yeah, it's not to that level. Okay, I agree. But to the same aspect, if you take this card and match it up against any card this year, any card of last year, any card of the last 5 years, what happened in this card by itself is fucking, I mean, like a fucking atom bomb over the rest of the entire weight divisions and the promotion, really, in general, of what's going to happen, the fallout of it afterwards.
Absolutely.
This is going to be one of those things that later on, when we go back, as time goes on, people will be like, oh, that happened on that card too? God damn, there was a lot that happened on that card. Yeah,
exactly.
You know what I'm saying? That's what this card's going to be.
No, I completely agree. When you come out with all the hyperbole that Dana White came out with and you don't deliver the super fight matchup that you were looking for, and because we had conversations about this, like, oh, is he going to be a champ from another division?
Yeah.
Is it going to be...
What's the super fight that he's
exactly,
talking about?
Because the way they're talking about it, we start getting all these crazy ideas because that's the level of hype you're putting behind it.
Yeah.
But I was able to compartmentalize where after the card was done... And I could talk shit about your failure to put together the card you said you were going to put together.
Still.
I was able to look forward to the matches that you did put on the
card. Me too. Me too. And that's why we talked about it. We were like, we were so fucking psyched up for this fucking card heading into it. And let's be honest, we're not the biggest fucking UFC fans.
Right.
Most of our podcast is fucking critiquing them for a lot of their fucking bonehead decisions, okay? Uh-huh. But that's just part of the sport that we live in 2024 anymore, right? When you hold the fucking biggest pie and make the fucking decisions that they make over and over again by shooting themselves in the foot, it's going to happen, okay? But that's just part of it. This card... regardless of what you thought it was going to be or whatever, once the card was made, just being able to look at it, it was like, holy shit. A lot of these fights could have been main event, co-main events of pay-per-views or fight nights.
Absolutely.
For fucking, I mean.
Absolutely.
I mean, that was the whole thing. Is it was like, dude, like, this is a fucking stellar fight card. That's why we fucking, you know, I mean, we when we get together to watch the fights, most of the time, we're watching them from the very beginning. Sometimes it's like, oh, I can't make them on my way, blah, blah,
right.
Whatever. And it fucking, you know, and you miss, like, the first fight or the first couple. Or you spend the early prelims watching them and still, like, talking about what's going to happen
exactly.
later on
exactly.
coming up because you're paying attention, but your mind is also, like, stuck around, like, where's this fucking big part at? Where, you know, where's this, you know, big impact that's going to come out of this card? But this one was just like, from the very beginning, it was just like, holy shit.
No.
Okay, now we got to move to the next one. What's next? Holy shit.
We
gotta, okay,
gotta
go to the next.
We got to be on time because we cannot miss the first fight on the card. Like, you know, absolutely, absolutely. And it delivered.
It delivered. You know? It did. It delivered. As long as you, if you let the promoter who lies to you take you into fucking fantasy land, then you're going to be mad when you find out the fantasy land isn't real.
And
you're going to be mad.
And let's be honest, guys. He's going to.
Of course. That's his job.
He's going to do it again.
Yes, he's going to. If you're going to believe him, he's going to do it every time. He's going to be like, you sucker, give me that money. Okay? But that's the whole point. You look at it. You think about it. You have a little bit of critical thought and you're like, okay, like, this is where we're at with it. And this card was fucking stacked. And out of all the things that could have happened, a lot of it was I mean, it paid out. A lot of the fights paid out. Even some of the fights that didn't, all those did was show, you know, some big areas for these fighters of where they need to come across. But, like, it was an awesome fight card. It really blew a lot of people's expectations, mine including. I had a certain idea of how I thought this card was going to go. And a lot of it went that way, right?
Yeah.
But then there were some where it was like, holy shit, I did not expect to see that.
Exactly.
I did not. So, like, yeah, it's just, I don't know. It is what it is. It was a great card. If I was going to, see, it would be hard to even rate this card because the card by itself, it's like its own category. You can't rate this card with other cards because they don't do cards like this.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
If you rated this card, it would have to be an A+. It would have to be up there just because of what's all happened and the rest of it, you know, and what we got to get out of it. It would have to be up there. If they had, you know, these kind of cards once a year, it would be a lot easier to make a level rating on it. But I guarantee you, there will not be another card this year or any time in the near future that's going to pay out like this fucking card did.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. You're not going to get the kind of performances that you saw, the kind of name recognition, just everything all roll into one.
Yeah.
You know? And that's, like, yeah, like you said, it's one of one or one of three. But we did this thing when we wanted to look back at some of these cards to see where 300 stacked up. And we went back and looked at 200 because you forget how much of a shit show it was trying to put the 200 card together and how many fights fell out and, you know, John Jones getting...
Yeah, and 100 was big for its time.
It was.
But it doesn't... But it's not near to the level of what this is because the sport isn't what it is.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There was a different time. Sport was at a different level. It was... For when that card came out, 100, it was big. It was a big deal. It was like, holy shit. They got all these, they have like three title fights on one card. They have
right.
like, oh man, they have all that. Like, it was a big deal when that happened. But that's not where we're at now with the sport. The sport's evolved way past that with all these different eras and just the evolution of it to boot. It's just like, yeah, it's a completely different sport. So, I don't know. Hats off to the UFC for doing it. To the fans, this is why the last month hasn't been great, and the next month or two aren't going to be great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
But, like, that's what it is. How do you want it? You can't have it both ways. We
right.
can't have every card like this. So it's like, do you want these once in a while and then a bunch of, like, lacklusters or, you know?
Yeah. Well, and like you said, there's not going to be as much name recognition on the next few cards just because of how everything played out. That doesn't mean the fights won't be good, though. It just means you might not be as invested in it as much because you don't know these fighters. But that's how you get to know these fighters, is by watching the fight nights, watching the undercards, and seeing these fighters come up and their evolution in the sport, you know?
Yeah, I agree. So, yeah, we will be moving forward with all the future installments of not just the UFC, but everything else that
absolutely
the world of combat sports has to offer. So wanted to do this special one, not only because this card warranted it, but because, you know, we had taken a break and we wanted to come back strong. So with this one and the regular show, just it's good to be back.
Yeah.
That was Motherfucking Scrapcast. One love.